sit gloria Domini in saecula laetabitur Dominus in operibus sui. Rex cedi Domine maris undi soni, Titanis mitigis qualinique soni, te humiles favori moduis venerando fis, se iubeos plagit ad variis liberare maris.
Nobilis humilis magne martir stabilis abilis comes venerabilis, et tutor laudabilis tuos subditos, serva carnis fragilis mole positos.
Hi, I'm Stan Brakhage, and I would like for you to just listen to this beautiful, beautiful piece of very ancient Chinese music called Birds Returning to the Forest, in which you can hear not only a multitude of bird sounds being imitated, but also fights between the birds as they invade each other's nests and so on, as imagined by Chinese composer Anonymous.
Thank you.
That was played by Louis Man Singh on an instrument called the erhu, which is really essentially two steel strings. And well might composers, ancient or modern, be involved in birdsong, because I hope to convince you before this program is over that almost all instrumental music really springs directly from that. Let's just listen for a moment to a recording of a variety of birds singing in the woods, a little record that's included in a book called Birdsong, Acoustics and Physiology by Greenwalt. And you'll hear a variety of them right now, including many warblers I'd like you to take some notice of.
Brown thrasher. Robin. Wood thrush. Eastern bluebird. Golden-crowned kinglet. Loggerhead shrike. White-eyed vireo. Prothonotary warbler. Blue-winged warbler. Parula warbler. Black pole warbler. Palm warbler. Connecticut warbler.
It goes on, and it isn't only composers, of course, that are interested in birds, but everybody. Poets, for example, some sense of just making a song, of giving forth of themselves into rhythmic word shaping in song, and also specifically imitating the birds in many of those songs. I want to not just deal with the poet, though, as I reintroduce James Broughton to you, because I realize that I've been so involved with that, I haven't had a chance to even let people know that he's a filmmaker, and one whose works are often shown at the University of Colorado on the Monday evening programs. He's one of the greatest living American filmmakers. And I think it's the particularity of his ability to not only think in terms of sound, but image, to think in terms of image when he's making sound in his poems, and of the sound or the texture of the noise of a thing when he's making films. His films, for instance, are extraordinarily involved in texture. But here, anyway, is his poem, The Birds of America, which will speak very well for itself in this context.
The Birds of America. Said the Birds of America, quack, 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 hoo, hoo, rah, rah, go, 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 phoebe, chip, chip, ka, 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 coo, ah, chewy, cuckoo. And what is the meaning of that? Said the solemn bird cage maker. Oh, nothing at all, said the old turkey. We just enjoy the noise. Well, why not do something that makes some sense, said the serious birdcage man. We do all there is to do, said the eagle, the lark, and the others. We eat and sleep and move about and watch what's going on. We mate and nest and sit and hatch and watch the young get on. We hunt and preen and sing and wash. We take long journeys and local jaunts, or simply sit about and scratch and watch what's going on. But that's quite pointless, said the birdcage man. You'll never get anywhere that way. Maybe, said the magpie. However, when this continent began, we birds were the only two-legged creatures, and we're still very much around. What's more, the woodpecker added, everything man knows he learned from us birds, but he's never enjoyed it as much. The cage maker scoffed. What could you teach me? To do all there is to do, said the heron, the crow, and the others. To eat and sleep and move about and watch what's going on. To mate and nest and sit and hatch and watch the young get on. To hunt and preen and sing and wash. To take long journeys and local jaunts. Or simply sit about and scratch and watch what's going on. Oh, that's absurd, said the birdcage maker. Don't you know the real meaning of life? Of course we do, said the birds of America. Quack, 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 quack. Hoo, hoo. Rawr, rawr. Go, 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 go. Fee, bee, cheep, cheep, ka, ka, ka. Coo-ah, chewy, cuckoo.
I always feel, when confronted with James Broughton, a little bit like a bird cage maker, only not so sour a one as he imagines. But I do hanker after meaning, after understanding. I mean, I'm fascinated that these birds around us are now considered by a whole branch of the science, the study of such, to be the leftovers of the dinosaurs. And not that dinosaurs were those great lizard things that I was raised to believe they were. And I pursue that. I study them and I watch them. And that's a visual occupation of mine out of which I make films that I can't share with you. But another aspect of it is that I've used in my films is slowed down bird sound, and I clearly hear the birth of at least all the horns of the orchestra. So from that same book I described to you earlier, I want you to listen to first some birds played regular speed and then 1/8 speed.
Another way of making the rapidly modulated phrases more nearly perceptible to human ears is to reproduce bird songs at speeds far below normal. The songs which follow are played first at normal speed, then at 1/8 normal speed. For the slow speed songs, there is, of course, an associated drop in pitch, amounting to 3 octaves. This transformation from high soprano to basso profundo is startling, but the modulations, at least, are in many cases recognizable. The Blackpoll Warbler. The Grasshopper Sparrow. Slate-colored junco. The song sparrow. Lapland Longspur.
Now, there is a composer named Olivier Messiaen who had the ability to sit and listen to these sounds of birds and to slow them down in his mind and even speed them up to hear the full extent of what his art, symphonic music and organ music, came out of. And he devoted a considerable part of his life to making a series of piano pieces called The Catalog of the Birds. They're played in the recording that I've brought by Yvonne Loriot, who's his lifelong companion and a great pianist. He himself, for years, was the organist of a church in Paris, and then also did teaching. I remember a friend of mine studied with him there at one point, and sometimes he would miss class. One day, after missing several classes, he showed up and started to talk about music to the students and wandered over to the window and opened it up and stood there and said, "Oh, les oiseaux, oh, les oiseaux," and just overcome, turned and left the room. What I'd like you to do is imagining this man so involved with birds, sitting in a marsh, listening particularly to La Roussarole effarvette, which is a marsh warbler. And I'm playing from the district where he lived, a piece of recorded in France of this bird and a couple of other birds. Just listen for a minute. And so, you have to imagine him listening particularly in this marsh to the reed warbler, as we would call it, among the sedge warbler and the bittern, which are the other birds heard there. And the reed warbler is the one with the kind of high, tweeting pitch. And out of that comes one of the greatest pieces of modern music that I know, La Roussarole effarvette. Thank you.
Thank you.
And so, we go out of the marsh of Olivier Messiaen to the new river of Charles Ives.